And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Muddy Knees Media.
The heating's on, it's getting darker earlier and earlier, so why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week. For only 100 of your English pence every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, counting down to Champions League round 3. Who's more in trouble, Real Madrid or Inter? What should Messi do now that he's an old fella? And can Bayern continue to KO the continent with Der Klassiker around the corner? All that and more as we round up the big Euro stories from the Catalans to Atalanta to Jules' Marseille rubbish banter. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Thanks so much for joining us. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of November this evening. Match day 3 of the Champions League gets underway. And right now, I'm talking to Alvaro Romeo. Hello, Alvaro.
Hola.
Hello. Julien Laurent is also with us.
Bonjour, everyone.
And James Horncastle.
Hi.
And of course, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Yes, and this is Totally Football Show European Edition. We're all fired up for the midweek continental action. I bet you are too, listener. And we've also got loads to tell you about from the weekend. And let's begin with a little round of moments of the weekend, starting with Jules.
My moments of the weekend, James, has to be Kylian Mbappé being told off by the referees at halftime of the non-PSG game. They
Why?
Called him into their office or their dressing room because leaving the pitch at halftime, he moaned that he said, every year is the same. They come here, we've got a three-hour meeting, and every time they lie to us because they didn't give it. He felt he should have had a penalty. They didn't give it to him. So he was really unhappy. So he was on a naughty step at halftime. They called him in, and he had to go in on his own like at school. And then they told him off, and then he left, and he was much better in the second half than he was in the first half, by the way.
Right. Will he score an actual Champions League goal this midweek? That's one of the big questions we'll be looking at later. Rafa, what's your moment of the weekend?
It is Herbert Heine, the Bayern chairman, withdrawing the offer of a contract extension to David Alaba, saying Bayern Ooh. Have stopped negotiating and there's not going to be any more offers available.
Why is that, Rafa? And who might leap in for him?
Why is that? Because Bayern had set a deadline at the end of October, which expired on Sunday or had expired by Sunday. And they went public with that, which was a little bit surprising timing-wise, but I think reflected their frustration with how things have not happened in the last few months. Mm. Alaba has been very coy, but a lot of indications suggest that he wants to go to Spain. And the way things are in Spain at the moment, going there as a free agent next summer might be more feasible than commanding a big transfer fee this summer, or even trying to maybe force a move through in January under Christian Eriksen conditions.
Right. So some people might feel that being your moment of the weekend implies it was a quiet weekend in the Bundesliga, but I don't agree. I think contract negotiations are every bit as exciting as goals and assists and any of that crazy ephemera. What about you, James? What have you got as a moment of the weekend?
Well, I'll let someone else do the talking for me, James.
Cristiano is back. This is the most important.
Wow. Cristiano is back. Can it be, James?
It is, James. He came back and scored not once, but twice as Juventus beat Spezia 4-1 in Cesena. Cristiano does say that is the most important thing. I would say Sassuolo winning in Naples was even bigger, and Zlatan being Zlatan as well. Just one of the many things that made this weekend in Serie A so exciting.
Crikey, try and stop you telling us about that later on. And Alvaro, un momento de la fin de semana.
El momento del fin de semana could have been Sevilla dropping to the 16th place in the table. They are terrible, but it has to be Eden Hazard scoring a goal for Real Madrid a year and 25 days after he scored his last goal for Real Madrid. It was some sort of resuscitation for a player that had six different types of injuries over the last year. He hasn't been able to play for Real Madrid to his best level. And this is terrific news for Real Madrid ahead of the clash against Inter Milan in this midweek.
Well, Real Madrid Inter is coming up on Tuesday, and we'll look at that next.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Well then, game of the round, arguably, comes on Tuesday as Real Madrid take on Inter at the picturesque Estadio Alfredo Di Stefano. The interesting thing about this group is that Real Madrid, Inter, Mönchengladbach and Shakhtar, and their Shakhtar were kind of seen as the designated group victims, but then they went and won in Madrid and then they held Inter and they're off to an absolute flyer, meaning there's a real chance that the other three could end up fighting over one more qualifying spot, making this game and this head-to-head series, two matches between Real Madrid and Inter, pretty huge. Alvaro, how much difference does Hazard coming back make to Real Madrid?
I think this is a crucial game for Real Madrid, and Zinedine Zidane today has said that this is a final for them, pretty much. I mean, if they lose their ambitions of qualifying for the next round, they're going to be definitely shattered. I think that we shouldn't think that playing at Madrid is no longer one of the most difficult tasks in football, because Real Madrid lately at Santiago Bernabeu or at home, which is the case now, they haven't done well. In fact, they have lost six of the last 13 UEFA Champions League matches, and at home they've been abysmal as well. And they have conceded already 5 goals in the Champions League. So, for sure, the result against Huesca was very good for them. They won 4-1. Eden Hazard scored, which is good news for Real Madrid, because I believe that he's going to play against Inter. In fact, he played only 60 minutes, and when a player plays 60 minutes exactly, normally you tend to think that he has agreed with the manager beforehand that he was going to play only 1 hour. So I believe that Real Madrid needs to win this game. It's fundamental for them. The game against Gladbach, they managed to get a point in the last second that gave them a lot of life in the Champions League. But this is the moment for them to make a statement in this group, because otherwise it's going to be too late for them. The good news for them is that they can play finally with that tridente that all Madridistas will think is the best possible, with Asensio, with Hazard and with Benzema. And that Lucas Vázquez, the only fullback, or at least like a potential fullback available, will be ready for the game, because he was doubtful, and today Zidane has said that Lucas Vázquez could play. So that's going to be important for them, because otherwise Carvajal, Odriozola, all the fullbacks available they had on the right, they were out.
Hazard coming into the side this weekend against Huesca with Vinicius out. What's the situation now between Vinicius and Benzema after the rude words the Frenchman spoke about his teammate mid-game last time?
I'm sure that is going to be fixed. And number one, because Real Madrid locker room in general is quite an amicable one, in which you know, there is a clear leader like Sergio Ramos, and then Zinedine Zidane is a man of harmony as well, and I believe that he has been dealing with sometimes players who had a lot of ego, and all of them seem to be very happy under playing under him. So I don't think that this is going to be something that will define Karim Benzema or Vinicius in any sort of way. I believe, however, that Vinicius is going to play, or was always going to play, less as soon as Eden Hazard was fit, because we know that Vinicius is not particularly the favorite player of Zinedine Zidane. He has been playing there because he's been all right at times, and because there was no other available option. I wouldn't read too much into the fact that this weekend Vinicius didn't play. I think that is part of the rotations that Zidane has been doing for about 3 or 4 years now.
So Real Madrid arriving fresh from a 4-1 victory and getting Eden Hazard back with a fine goal as well. Inter, meanwhile, arriving
at this clash at the Val de Bebes in rather different circumstances, eh, James?
Yeah, a little bit, James. I mean, they were disappointing at the weekend, or got a disappointing result. They fell 2-0 down to Parma, as they did this time last year. But Parma without 10 players due to a variety of reasons, COVID-19, injuries, having to play a midfielder at right back, having to play a teenager at centre back, and going to San Siro. Inter did come back, but you know, as has been the case this season, they dominate games. Yeah, they control possession upwards of 60%. They press well. They have, what, more than 20 shots a game. Their XG far outstrips that of their opponents. And yet, in one or two moments, they are vulnerable and they concede. And that has been the story of their season so far. It's been really frustrating for Antonio Conte, who, you know, he's trying to change the emphasis, not only of his team, but I think of his entire coaching philosophy, which at the moment seems to be, you'll score three, we'll score four. You know, that hasn't been who Conte is for the last decade. You know, his Juventus teams were built on having the best defence. Yeah, that was the one thing that got the most headlines about them. You know, playing a back three, but at the same time, you know, having an attacking system as well. But now they seem to be, he seems to be more attacking than ever. I suppose the issue going into this game is that Romelu Lukaku, who's been in such great form, you know, isn't flying to Madrid. He was injured in the game against Shakhtar whilst taking a free kick, which struck the bar. And again, I mean, you look at their Champions League form, you know, they've played two games, they've got 2 points. And again, they probably think and are entitled to think that they deserve to be on maximum points because they dominated Gladbach in what was, you know, quite an even game, but ultimately Gladbach scored with only two shots on target, one of which was a penalty kick. And then the Shakhtar game, you know, they hit the bar twice. Yeah, again, as I said, you know, they try and have 30 shots a game. They did that in this one and didn't manage to put anyone, any of them past the goalkeeper, even though Trubin is not the first choice Shakhtar keeper. Lautaro missed a sitter. And here they are going into this doubleheader in a very precarious position.
Mm. What do you think, Rafa? You saw them against Borussia Mönchengladbach. You saw Real against Borussia Mönchengladbach. What's your take on this game?
I mean, Real Madrid are the same Real Madrid we've seen over the last few years. As a team, you're not really convinced, but they still have amazing players who can do stuff. I mean, Karim Benzema seems in great form. Scored against Gladbach, scored against Huesca. Maybe not the more stringent of defences he's going to come up against this season, but still, you have to take your chances. So I think they struggle when you take the ball off them. Defensively, man against man, they're still good. When it comes to sort of tactically defending as a team, it's a little bit clunky. And that's where I think some of the struggles in European football and specifically can be explained, because you come up against sides who want to monopolize the ball. And I think it'd be really, really interesting. Having seen a lot of Inter and Real Madrid over the last couple of months, I would say Inter are clear favourites to win this game. But then Real Madrid have that still diminished, but nevertheless, there is still an X factor, maybe with a small X rather than a big one.
Can we show some love to Gervinho? My boy Gervinho. What? I mean, the first goal especially was just sensational. I mean, I know he can be hit and miss a lot, but he's had some...
Mostly miss.
This was Parma's first goal on the weekend against Inter.
Wow.
Ball over the top, and he just volleys it straight in. It's a glorious goal. It's Del Piero-esque, if we're going to start throwing
inside of his left foot. It was just fantastic, I thought. And, you know,
it's a great run as well, because he initially makes a run and then basically goes, nah, it's not worth it. Looks completely disinterested. And then when the ball is played, he just turns on the afterburners, and De Vrij is like, oh God, he's behind me. And it's a magnificent finish. But, yeah, I mean, the irony, I suppose, James and Jules, with Gervinho this weekend was that Conte actually wanted him to come and play for Inter, be a backup striker for Lukaku, who was out for that game. And what should happen? Gervinho ends up scoring both goals for Parma.
There is something about Real Madrid, and going back to what Rafael was saying before, without the ball, they seem to collapse and melt off a little bit. And there was this debate last week in Spain, especially After the Spanish teams didn't do particularly well in the Champions League first round, if Spanish football was outdated or not when it comes to the European stage. And I wouldn't say that at all, but for example, the other day against Borussia in Germany, you could see that Real Madrid couldn't handle a player like Thuram sometimes when a Borussia player was going forward. Sometimes the Real Madrid players just couldn't catch him or just couldn't tackle him properly. And I believe that there is a certain physicality in football that is affecting those teams that they have gotten a little bit old just because they couldn't get rid of some glorious players that you couldn't get rid of so easily. The likes of Luka Modric, for example, or Toni Kroos or Sergio Ramos. I mean, they've been amazing and it's very difficult to get rid of them. But sometimes in some games you notice that they are in the final third of their career, to put it some sort of way. I think that Inter can have that physicality too, but Real Madrid has quality in the squad, that's for sure. And my only question here is, what is the level of ambition that Real Madrid is going to show going forward? Because if they don't balance very well their ambition with their defense, they may be out of the Champions League by the early November.
Which has never happened before. Extraordinary. Real Madrid, who can't get rid of some of their old glories, into the team that old glories go to when clubs do get rid of them. Would that be fair, James? They wanted Gervinho, they've got Kolarov, they've got Sanchez, they've got Eriksen.
Not entirely fair. I mean, they did sign Hakimi for 40 million euros. Right, they've got Alessandro Bastoni, and I would say arguably their best player this season has been Nicolò Barella, who's been outstanding since the restart. But particularly the two guys that Conte wanted in the off-season, Kolarov and Vidal, have not been great. They've both given penalties away. Kolarov against Milan in the derby, Vidal in the game against Gladbach. And, you know, they both were involved in that second goal that Gladbach scored, where Kolarov goes flying forward as the left centre-back and Vidal's like, oh God, there's no one behind me. He goes and plays left centre-back and gets caught out by that. I mean, we keep coming back to it, James, the Kaká pass for Crespo in that game. So
Neuhaus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither of them doing great, I would say, or bringing the experience that Conte wanted.
I'm just a little surprised that Rafa feels that Inter are the favourites in this game. Their record in crunch matches, not great. I mean, in the Champions League in general, two wins in the last 12 games in this tournament. Jules, what's your take?
I just think Inter without Lukaku, you know, it's not the same at all. I don't know who Conte will go to replace him. He obviously tried to have Perisic up front at the weekend. Didn't think he worked. Then you've got Pinamonti, Esposito. They're young players, but maybe Pinamonti is the one that looks the most like Lukaku in the way he plays. Do you throw him in a game like this? Do you play a bit more defensive? Even if you get a draw, maybe it's not a bad result. I just think everything is based so much on Lukaku in that team that when he's not there, suddenly, like, I'm not sure they even know how to play anymore. You know, so it's very difficult that he's not there.
He keeps confusing things, I suppose, Conte. I mean, you mentioned Pinamonti, you know, who I remember Jules raving about when he was playing Europa League for Inter a few years ago, made his debut, and that competition looked special. And instead of playing him, he's a natural centre-forward next to Lautaro. At the weekend, he played Perisic as his second striker. Perisic did end up getting the stoppage time equaliser, but again, doesn't look an entirely good fit up front for them there. I think, yeah, the reason why Rafa's confident in Inter is because they dominate games. They create loads and loads of chances. Even last year, for example, in the Champions League, they went away to Barcelona, played superb for an hour, got in front of that game.
Did they win?
No, but the reason why they didn't win, James, was, as Conte put it, he didn't feel they had a deep enough squad at the time.
Right.
Particularly in midfield.
That came away at Borussia Dortmund when they dominated that one. Did they win that one?
No, but I think ultimately, again, that was the scene of his famous rant about basically them signing players from Cagliari and Sassuolo for him, which kind of ignored the fact that they'd gone and spent upwards of 70 million for Lukaku on him from Manchester United. They've since gone out and got Vidal from Barcelona, who is his sort of essentially his best man, loves him, said he would go to war for him. I think the thing is, you go back to the first game of this season when they were, they were trailing Fiorentina on opening night, and he ends up being able to send on Vidal, Nainggolan, Hakimi, Sanchez, Stefano Sensi. That's the bench that he didn't have last year. In the last month, for a variety of reasons, COVID-19, which decimated his squad, six players basically got taken out of it. He's had to play Kolarov as a left centre-back because Bastoni and Ashley Young and Skriniar have all had COVID down that side. Hakimi tests positive in a UEFA test the day of the game against Gladbach. Hakimi, who's been such a big player for them, which rules him out. He then has a test in Italy with Inter the following day. He tests negative. All of those things have disrupted them so far. So, as much as Conte's record in Europe gets pointed out, he did reach a final last year, let's not forget, and lost to Sevilla. It is a good team.
We'll see on Tuesday. We'll see on Tuesday evening. In that same group, Shakhtar, of course, leading on 4 points, 2 points clear of both Borussia Mönchengladbach and Inter, and 3 clear of Real Madrid. For their next trick, Shakhtar will be attempting to do Borussia Mönchengladbach. We'll talk about that and other things next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Rafa, Gladbach, big game for them away in the Ukraine on Tuesday against group-leading Shakhtar Donetsk. Gladbach coming into this, having beaten Leipzig 1-0 at the weekend. Among the surprises of this game, Nagelsmann wearing a very tasteful kind of and youthful hoodie as well. It was nice, his get-up on the sideline.
Relatively easy on the eye, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, it was their first ever win, Gladbach, over Leipzig.
Yes, Leipzig haven't been in the Bundesliga all that long, but of course, beating them these days is not that easy, even though Manchester United made it look very easy in the Champions League last week. So it was a big win for Gladbach, especially after expending so much energy against Real Madrid. Marcus Thuram didn't start that game, so they had to mix it up a little bit, but they still found enough to beat this Leipzig side. And Gladbach are the real deal. I don't think they can challenge Bayern and Dortmund for the title, but for a team that still is miles behind in terms of the wages or the money they can spend on players, to be so consistent in a season when they have to play Champions League at the same time is already hugely impressive in my book.
Okay, they're lying fifth right now. Leipzig, who were on top of the Bundesliga, have now slipped to third, 2 points behind the joint leaders Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Which is interesting that those two are joint top because they're facing each other next weekend, Rafa.
Yes, and the big question is, can Lucien Favre and Dortmund finally win one of those big games? They didn't do it in May when it really mattered, when they could have won the league potentially. They didn't do it in the Super Cup when it mattered less, but still would have been a big symbolic triumph. And of course, they were heavily beaten in Munich the last couple of times as well. In the seasons gone by. So this will be seen as another big test. I think the situation for Favre himself is probably beyond repair. I'm not sure he can see out the season with the realistic hope of getting another year or two in his contract. But still, Dortmund still have a chance of doing something special, but for that they will have to beat Bayern, because this Bayern team don't drop many points, so you'll have to do it. And I think a lot of neutrals are hoping that they can finally get one of those big results.
Okay, that's coming up at the weekend. Before that, Dortmund are in action Wednesday in the Champions League. Tuesday sees Bayern looking to make it 14 straight victories in this competition. They'll be away at Red Bull Salzburg, while in that group, Lokomotiv take on Atletico. How are Atletico doing, Alvaro?
They are doing better. I wouldn't say that Atletico is still like a finished product exactly, but they are doing a good job. And this weekend they managed to win to beat Osasuna 3-1. So they are third now with 14 points in La Liga. Generally speaking, there is the sense that this team can still grow. João Félix scored the brace and he's becoming the player that we all knew he was, but unfortunately last season he didn't get to that point. He didn't flourish as much. And yeah, it's funny because they are supposed to be very good defensively, but curiously, they are the team with the best scoring ratio in La Liga, just after Real Sociedad. They have scored 13 goals in 6 games, but I don't think that they are that prolific going forward. I think that they are basically bullying their opponents when they have a favorable scoreline, because they haven't scored in 2 games in La Liga, they didn't score against Bayern either. And then, for example, they did score 6 against Granada. They have scored 3 goals in the stoppage time in La Liga this season. So, you know, they can produce really good things and they can be very good going forward. But once they break the deadlock, so that is the, I would say, the thing that Atletico Madrid is looking to do better, like manage to make it better in the first half, to open the scoreline sooner, just to have less stress during the game. All that said, look, the situation has been a little bit, I would say, straightened. It looked worse when they lost against Bayern 4-0, then they beat Salzburg 3-2 in a very complicated game. And this time against Lokomotiv, I think that they shouldn't have a problem to get the 3 points. And having 6 out of 9, you know, you look at life with a better perspective.
You sure do. Is that 4 goals in 2 games now for João Félix? And if so, what's behind that? Has Diego Simeone tweaked things for him, or is it the arrival of Suarez alongside him up front? Or what's the key?
I think the key here with João Félix is that he feels important. I mean, it doesn't matter so much who he's playing with, but it matters the fact that he's taking certain responsibilities that he didn't always take last season. For example, against Osasuna the other day, he was the focal point all the time, and against Salzburg as well in the Champions League, he moves between the lines, behind the striker. He's got certain freedom. Simeone normally is not a friend of giving a lot of freedom to players, but with João Félix, I think that he had to, you know, change his principles a little bit, because he knows that João Félix needs to, you know, move in certain places, go to the left, to the right. And I think that's the key, the fact that João Félix feels more important because he's got that freedom, and therefore he's just blossoming. At the same time, last season it was a season of adaptation to the league, and we have seen that with players like Diego Costa, for example, even in his first season at Atletico de Madrid, or Antoine Griezmann. The first months weren't easy for them, but then after a while, they got used to Simeone's system and they became the most important players of the team.
Brilliant. All right. Well, that's coming up on Tuesday, as I say. Atletico away in Russia while Bayern visits Salzburg. Also on Tuesday, Liverpool have an exciting trip to Bergamo. That is up next.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say. And that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
The Totally Football Shows and The Athletic are delighted to be supporting Football Aid for the months of October and November. Bid now at footballaid.com to get your hands on some incredible football memorabilia, including signed shirts from Steven Gerrard, Gianluca Vialli, Gareth Bale and even Peter Crouch's boots. Find out more, get bidding and support the cause at footballaid.com.
Zapata in area, Zapata, palla sul destro, parte il tiro, rete, gol fantastico, Zapata demolisce la difesa dell'Ajax.
Wow, Group D has already given us one of the games of the group stage. Last week's 2-2 draw between Atalanta and Ajax in Bergamo. Tuesday, it's the turn of Liverpool to visit the Bergamaschi. Liverpool, of course, currently leading the group 2 points ahead of Atalanta, with Ajax on a single point and Midtjylland, the other team in the group, on nothing at all. James, what are the prospects of Atalanta and their slightly rocky defence stopping Liverpool on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, this is Atalanta's best ever start to a season. 4 wins in 6 in Serie A. They beat Crotone at the weekend. It was quite an attritional win for them because they lost players. You know, Martin Deroon was already out. He's like a captain for them, even though Papu Gomez wears the armband. Robin Gosens as well, who was one of the most prolific defenders last year from his wingback position, he won't play. Gasperini's just given an update on that. And they're going to have late fitness tests for the likes of Romero, Toloi, Hatibur as well, all of whom went off in that game. So curious to see in what state Atalanta present themselves, but yeah, certainly they are confident that they can score on anyone. I mean, yeah, just as they're carrying a few injuries, we all know about Liverpool's as well.
Although Liverpool are the only team in the Champions League yet to concede a goal, curiously.
Yeah, curiously. We'll have to see whether that withstands the Atalanta onslaught. But Klopp has just been saying that, you know, this game fascinates him more than the Ajax one, you know, that he enjoys watching Atalanta. I'm sure he's just showering them with praise of playing to the gallery. But he says they remind him a bit of Leeds. And that was a cracking game between Leeds and Liverpool earlier in the season. So if we get anything like that, brilliant.
Yeah, that game finished 4-3. The thing for Liverpool is they obviously, Nathaniel Phillips, who made his debut, and you know, the former Stuttgart loanee at the weekend, which was, I think, a big surprise to a lot of people, is not eligible to play in the Champions League because he was not registered. So you almost go back to square one after the Fabinho injury. You know, what do you do? Can Matip play anything? Do you have to go to Rhys Williams, who obviously you clearly, it's not that you didn't trust him, but he could have played at the weekend to get a bit of game time before the Champions League game. You didn't play him. You chose Phillips, who you knew could not play in the Champions League. I find that whole fascinating story on who is he going to play, how are they going to play against Atalanta as well. The last team you want to have uncertainties in your defence is before a game against Atalanta. So I just think this is brilliant.
Liverpool, who used to have a terrible record away from home in the Champions League, have actually won their last three. Klopp, though, has never won a game in Italy. Three matches in charge of Liverpool and two previously with Borussia Dortmund. And he's lost all five of them. Interesting stuff. The other game in that group, meanwhile, sees Ajax taking on Midtjylland, or at least we hope it does, because there's some really worrying news about the Dutch champions coming into Tuesday's action.
Yeah, only 17 players will travel to Denmark from the Ajax side. It seems that they have been depleted. I imagine we'll have to get confirmation of this, but obviously players subjected to COVID tests before they travel. So again, I'd say question marks raised about the sporting integrity, the competitive balance of this competition during a pandemic when more or less all of Europe is locking down and yet football continues.
Indeed. Ajax did manage a 5-2 win over Fortuna Sittard at the weekend. I also believe there was a Real Madrid player tested positive. Has there been any update on that, Alvaro?
Yes, it's been Eder Militao. The news leaked on Sunday evening that one Real Madrid player had tested positive. And, you know, at the end, it was Eder Militao. Unfortunately for him, he won't be playing against Inter. And yeah, I mean, I think I will have to get used to it, really, because it's happening.
But no sign of it spreading. Often there's one and then the next day you get a whole bunch more, but no sign of it spreading yet.
No. There hasn't been anything like that so far. And fingers crossed that, you know, this is not going to spread around the Real Madrid squad.
Elsewhere on Tuesday, over in Group C, leaders Man City hosting Olympiacos. City currently 2 wins from 2 in the group stage, scored 6, conceded 1. The other match, meanwhile, sees Porto taking on Marseille. Marseille, who are currently on track to match their incredible record from their last appearance in the group stage, ages, when they had no points, no goals.
Indeed, they're just one defeat away from the all-time record by Anderlecht of 12 consecutive losses in the Champions League. They're on 11, obviously, which would be very special if they can equal the records. It's obviously a very special game for AVB and, you know, for Villas-Boas to go back to Porto, where that club played such a huge part in his not just in his managerial career, but I think in his whole education, his whole life, really. There's no doubt he will go back there one day. He's still a socios at the club. He pays his, I don't know how you say in English, his registration fees. Mm-hmm. He pays his fees every month. And I think he owes a lot to the club. So even without fans or not many fans, it would be a very special return for him. But he can't. He can't not think about the importance of that game for Marseille. Didn't play at the weekend because the game against Lens was postponed because Lens had 11 players out because of the COVID. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing for Marseille, but certainly they have to show more than against Olympiacos and Man City, where they were really too cautious, too defensive, too average. And this is a huge game for them. If they just want to keep a little bit of hope to either qualify and finishing second or finishing third and going to Europa League.
Okay. André Villas-Boas in quite feisty mood after the Man City game. I saw this press conference where he was saying, oh, yeah, sure, if you had Pep, but instead you've got André Villas-Boas with his tactics.
Yeah. I mean, one, I don't think it's a good thing when you start talking about yourself in the third person. I think there's something wrong in there like he did. And two, when you start being so sarcastic that you actually take the mickey of your own self, which I think, again, is not very good. I don't know why he came out with that line. There was nothing offensive about the question, for sure.
What was
the
question?
We were just questioning a little bit some of his tactics. Remember the week before, he said to us in his press conference, I've had enough of your questions about tactics. You always ask about tactics. And we were like, well, you're the coach. You know, your tactic is not working. You're not actually doing that great this season. So that's why we're asking. And then again after City, so we'll see how he is tomorrow in his press conference. Again, I think emotionally it's a very important game for him, so it might be a bit different. But it looks like he's losing his nerves at time, and it's not good. And certainly we haven't been used to that from him since he moved to France.
Jules, do you participate in the press conference there in Marseille, but from London, your base?
For some of them, yeah, you've got Zoom access, yeah.
All right, that's yeah, modern, nice. Situation in that group, Man City on 6 points, Porto and Olympiacos both on 3, Marseille nil point. Very good. If you thought Tuesday's lineup sounded exciting, wait till you hear about what's coming up on Wednesday, which we'll be talking about after this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Было довольно сильным ударом. Но опять-таки Шевченко шел, молодец. Феррер ошибся, и Ребров с 30 метров пустые ворота отправляет мяч в четвертый раз.
23 years ago, this very week, Динамо Киев went to the Camp Nou in the group stage of the Champions League and won 4-0. 4-0 against a Barcelona team featuring the likes of Rivaldo and Figo and managed by Luis van Gaal. Kiev, of course, though, they had Lobanovsky on the bench and most importantly, they had Rebrov and Shevchenko on the field. Sheva with a hat-trick, Rebrov getting the other one, 4-0. Does that game live on in infamy in Catalonia, Alvaro?
Of course it does. I remember it so well as well, because, you know, it was the beginning of Luis van Gaal's era as a Barcelona manager after Bobby Robson, and the expectations were very high as well, because the season before, Barcelona had won the Cup, Winners' Cup, and they had lost Ronaldo that summer, but at the same time they signed Sonny Anderson, they had Rivaldo, Figo, as you said, and yeah, Shevchenko, Rebrov and company, they just, you know, they were like a strong wind, a typhoon at the Camp Nou, and they managed to get a victory that will reverberate in history. And I believe that game marked Louis van Gaal forever as a Barcelona manager. It didn't matter so much that they won the double in one of his seasons and the league in 1999. I think that not having done well in Champions League, not going through the group stage in that year was something that he couldn't recover from.
Well, guess who's arriving this Wednesday at the Camp Nou? Yes, it's Dinamo Kiev. And you know what? They're going to find a Barcelona side that's had an even worse start to the season this time under Ronald Koeman than they did under Louis van Gaal. In fact, they've never had a worse start to a Liga campaign, at least since the introduction of 3 points. The latest setback coming this weekend when they drew 1-1 with Alaves. Alaves taking the lead thanks to some comedy defending. A bit of a mix-up between Gerard Piqué and Neto.
Yes, I think that Neto was not right when he just then ran towards Gerard Piqué in that action. But anyway, let's put the mistake under the belt of both. I think that there is no trust on Neto as a goalkeeper. The good thing for Barcelona is that Ter Stegen is ready. I don't know if to play this against Dynamo Kiev because he started, he resumed training this week, but he will be ready definitely for the next weekend. And yeah, we have to say that Barcelona was good against Alaves. They shot 9 times on target. Then I believe that they attack and they produce some certain good football, similar to what they did against Juventus, but they just couldn't score. And I said this before, but I believe that Barcelona is missing a number 9 because Martin Braithwaite is not qualified to be Barcelona's number 9. And you need somebody in the box. I mean, they've got great attackers. Lionel Messi is not having a good season when it comes to his scoring records, and I will tell you about that later. But yeah, Luis Suarez, even though he was not probably the best striker for Barcelona over the last couple of years because his numbers weren't as good as they were in 2015, 2016, a player of that profile, the Luis Suarez profile, is going to be missed this season. That's why they wanted to sign a player like Lautaro, because they don't have a qualified number 9 for a team of this quality.
Lautaro is banging them in right now. For Inter.
Lautaro has been terrible.
Maybe he's sad because he doesn't play for Barcelona. Perhaps. But let me tell you something, Jens, and I'll be very quick about Lionel Messi's numbers. Because, you know, sometimes Messi has been capable of scoring more goals than any other number 9 in the history of football. Well, in 2019, he scored 46 goals in 54 games. And in 2020... he has scored only 20 goals in 36 games. But after the resumption, only 11 goals in 23 games and 6 of them from the penalty spot. So, you know, there is obviously an accuracy crisis in there. He is not in front of the goalkeeper as accurate as he was before. Maybe he needs that spark, that tenth of second, just to get to the ball before the defender. And yeah, Barcelona is missing those goals from Lionel Messi.
And still yet to score from open play this season.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs to understand that he can't do the things that he used to do 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, which I think is...
We all do, Jules.
No, exactly. But in an evolution of a football player, it's normal. Cristiano is not the same. Ibra is not the same. They don't do
Cristiano
the same things
back,
as before.
Cristiano is back, Julian.
Cristiano is back.
Ibra scored from open play this weekend.
Yeah, but no, in the sense that they don't play the same way as they did 2 years ago or 5 years ago. They don't try to do the same thing. Messi is still trying to play like he was 15 years ago. Right. And I think there's a point where he just can't do exactly the same thing that he used to do before. It's normal. He's older. He's not as quick as he was. The rest of the team around him is not as strong as it was either. And I think maybe it's good time for him to look into it and say, do you know what? Let's do something a bit different than always trying to save the world every time, because it's just not working anymore.
That's why I think that it's very, very important for him to play alongside quick players who can understand his passes. Because right now, Lionel Messi, the older he gets, the farther away he's getting from the box. He's becoming more of a midfielder. So obviously his scoring numbers, they're going to be affected as soon as he was going to get older. But the remarkable thing here is how radical the drops in the number have been. I mean, he's got a 0.21% of a scoring ratio since the restart of football from open play. That is something that never happened in his career. Wow. And it has happened suddenly. There hasn't been any slow transition to this.
Well, he will be facing a severely weakened Dynamo Kiev side. They are another team affected by a rash of positive results for COVID-19 ahead of this game. Barcelona currently lying 12th, by the way, in the Liga, 8 points behind Real Madrid with a game in hand. Top of La Liga, a Real Sociedad. Quick mention for them. Their last four games, a 3-0 win, another 3-0 win, a 4-1 win, and then another 4-1 win this weekend against Celta Vigo. Woof. Featuring David Silva's first La Liga goal since May the 4th, 2010.
El centro de Adrián Silva, gol! David Silva es un gran futbolista, un driblador, un cerebro, un creativo. adelanta la Real, marca David Silva 0-1.
He scored the header, which is something that David Silva doesn't do very often, but even though in a European Cup final, he did score a header against Italy too, with Spain, I remember that. But anyway, the most important thing with Real Sociedad is that there is a belief from the manager that what they are doing is the right thing. Because after losing against Napoli on Thursday, he said that they played exactly the way he wanted his team to play, despite the defeat. And then 3 days later, they managed to win at Celta's ground 4-1 with two goals from William José, Oyarzabal also scoring. And then there is another player up there, up front. I think that I don't talk enough about him because we never have the time, but Portu has been one of the most astute signings by Real Sociedad over the last years because his industrious work up front is helping Real Sociedad a lot, and he's giving plenty of assists as well.
Excellent. Whether they are top of the league. Of course, the team that we were talking about at the start of the season as being one that might potentially disrupt the big three in La Liga was Sevilla. And they're instead all the way down in 16th place. Sevilla, of course, in Chelsea's Champions League group. This weekend, they lost to Bilbao, Athletic Bilbao. Your team, Alvaro.
We beat them, yeah. You know, I was watching the first half and I was wondering why I didn't choose to do anything else on Saturday afternoon because the first half was really bad by both teams. And Athletic de Bilbao was also like presenting a very physical game. Sevilla was accepting the challenge. In fact, the game ended up with 10 yellow cards. And they scored first. And Nesiri scored the first goal. And then Iker Muniain changed the game. Thanks to him, Athletic de Bilbao managed to come back. And yes, Sevilla has collected only 1 point out of 12. Which is the worst run in the league under Lopetegui. And what surprises more here about the defeat at Bilbao is not the fact that Sevilla was not competitive. It's the fact that Julen Lopetegui's team, they went for the game. I mean, Lopetegui couldn't have put a better lineup than the one he did. And still, they weren't capable of producing chances. Again, the main problem of Sevilla is going forward. If Ocampos is not inspired, then it takes them ages to create a proper chance. And you could see that as well in Stamford Bridge against Chelsea.
Sevilla currently tied with Chelsea on 4 points in that group with Krasnodar, where Sevilla will be playing this midweek with 1 point alongside Rennes. Lopetegui getting bullied on the sideline, meanwhile, by Bilbao's Raul Garcia.
Yes, I mean, he is one of these players that, you know, I don't think that any other player in La Liga lives more comfortably in the border between the yellow card and the red card. Wow. I mean, he knows how to stay on the pitch with the yellow card and still grind the gears of some other opponents as well, even the rivals, you know, the opponent's manager too.
So just tell us briefly what happened here for anyone who missed it.
Yeah, basically, he got a little bit of a spat with Sevilla manager Julen Lopetegui. Then in the touchline, they were kind of arguing, and at some point Julen Lopetegui gives him his hand just to, you know, to have a shake on that and to forget about it. And Raul García basically takes his hand and he pulls it really strongly, and Lopetegui couldn't believe what was happening.
All right, well, returning to Barcelona's group, the other game there on Wednesday will see Hungarian champions Ferencváros taking on Juventus, who got a win this weekend. Cristiano returning and scoring twice coming off the bench in what was Andrea Pirlo's first away victory as a manager. James?
Yeah, not the most arduous, James, I must say. They were coming up against the Spezia side, which were promoted beyond all expectation. First time in Serie A, even though they do have a national title, or the Vigili di Fuoco, the firemen of Spezia, have a national title from what, just after or during the war years, I forget.
During the war years, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Spezia came back in this game after Juventus went in front. Morata had another goal disallowed. That's 6 goals disallowed this season already after that hat-trick against Barcelona. And yeah, ultimately the difference is Cristiano comes on and what, 3 minutes later, scores. I think Morata has been magnificent for Juventus since he rejoined the club. You know, every performance that he's put in, he's shown himself to be a complete number nine. Scores different kinds of goals, but you know, particularly the chances that he creates, how well he plays that position. You know, sort of linking the play back to goal, putting his teammates through on goal. He's been really, really good. But obviously when Cristiano comes back, instantly seizes the initiative in this game, took it by the scruff of the neck, and they didn't look like losing from that point in, even though Buffon, who was standing in for Wojciech Szczesny, needed to make a pretty good save from a header from a corner kick. But bit of a new look, I'd say, to this Juventus side in that they played McKennie instead of Ramsey or Kulusevski behind the two strikers, which initially was Morata and Dybala. You know, McKennie, very good at kind of winning the ball back, was involved in the first goal as well. And yeah, so just I think balances the team maybe a little bit better, or at least that was the impression from, you know, this 70-minute performance that he put in. Because Juventus have looked very flimsy in midfield, you know, particularly with, you know, Arthur and Bentancur or whoever it is in there. They've been played through too easily. So adding someone else who is, you know, more, you know, sort of more physically imposing midfielder over a Kulusevski or a Ramsey, I think, was pretty interesting. But we'll have to see what they come up with in midweek in Europe as well. That,
right,
all is not lost for them in Europe, despite that defeat to Barcelona.
Indeed. They are 4 points, meanwhile, in Serie A. 4 points off the top, with Milan currently in first place on a 24-game unbeaten run in all competitions. They won once again in the Europa League last Thursday, and this weekend they had a 2-1 win over Udinese with a fresh-faced young Ibrahimovic scoring the winner with 7 minutes to go. That's 7 in 4 league matches for him this season. He's incredible.
He is top scorer in the league. I think top scorer in Serie A since the restart as well. And he scored in each of his last 6 Serie A games. The last player to do that was Zlatan. Last player before him to do it was Andriy Shevchenko. And, you know, I wrote about it at the weekend, you know, how within Milan, what they really value about Zlatan is not only the goals, but, you know, how he has kind of lifted everyone around him. And all of a sudden, the young players, remember Milan, the youngest side in Europe, certainly in the top 5 leagues, they've all flourished with him in the side because he just takes the pressure off them. You know, they know that they've always got a chance when he's in the team. And he is an outstanding competitor. And, you know, I think that has made everybody better.
But it's like the Mighty Ducks. But sorry, you finished what you were going to say.
No, I love the Mighty Ducks comparison.
It's like the Mighty Ducks in that if Emilio Estevez actually suited up for the Ducks and took, he's essentially in that role. You've got these fresh-faced kids, and then Ibra is the wise old man, and bringing this ragbag together to defeat all comers. What's their average age then if they're the youngest team in Europe, but they've got a 39-year-old in their ranks?
He was 25 years old, 25.6 months old, with a 39-year-old in the team.
Incredible.
So significantly lower than that without Ibra.
Incredible stuff from Milan. Are they going to win the title, James?
It's still too early to tell, I think. I mean, they've got great momentum behind them. They beat Inter in the derby for the first time in nearly 5 years as well. Zlatan certainly believes, but yeah, let's see. You know, let's not forget that Milan haven't been in the Champions League since the end of the Allegri era, when Clarence Seedorf took charge of those 2 games against Atletico Madrid. So that's six seasons ago. So certainly the objective going into this season was to get back into that competition.
A quick mention for the team in second place in Serie A, who are not Juve, not Napoli, not Inter, not Roma, but Sassuolo.
Outstanding, James. Best ever start to the season, better even than the year in which they got into Europe under Eusebio Di Francesco. And I suppose the surprise is that they go to Naples to play Napoli, who have been one of the best teams so far this season. They were unbeaten, unless you count that 3-0 defeat that was awarded against them and given to Juventus for them not showing up for that game before the last international break. And Sassuolo didn't have Domenico Berardi, their captain, Didn't have Francesco Caputo, who with Immobile was the top scoring Italian last year, and certainly has been one of the most prolific players since the restart. And yet they managed to win 2-0. And I think what was impressive about it is that, you know, this is a team that likes to play with a high line, likes to press, takes lots of shots, scores lots of goals. And yet in this game, they ground out the win. They defended really well, even though they had to ride their luck at times. You had Osimhen missing a big chance early on. You had Mertens missing a chance at the start of the second half. But they really held their nerve and, impressive from the Nedovedi, and yet another reason why Roberto Di Zerbi, their coach, is regarded, I wouldn't say there's the next big thing, but he's already established himself as one of the best Italian coaches.
Lovely stuff, James. All right. If you're feeling like you're missing a bit of Paris Saint-Germain chat, fear not, listener. That's up next.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Wednesday also sees Group H in action, the group which features Man United currently leading the way with 6 points, but also RB Leipzig and PSG, who are tied behind Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side, and Başakşehir, the Turkish champions. One of RB Leipzig and Paris Saint-Germain, as it stands, won't be making it out of the group. You recall that not more than a couple of months ago, these two were contesting a semi-final in the Champions League, but disaster awaits for one of them. They are facing each other in Leipzig on Wednesday. It was 3-0 in Lisbon. Is it going to be different this time? Rafa, Jules, what do you think?
Well, it could easily be the same result, James. You saw that Leipzig were a little bit vulnerable, especially on the break against Man United. I think PSG will be quite confident that they can expose them as well. But, of course, Leipzig can play a bit. And I think if they're a little bit more proactive and a little bit more courageous than they were against PSG back in the summer, they have a chance. I think PSG don't like it when you take the ball off them. And Leipzig tried to play on the counter themselves, and I think that didn't work out. And I was speaking to Marcel Sabitzer, their captain, before the Man United game, and he said that he couldn't sleep the whole night after that defeat, and they were sort of wondering what they could have done differently. I think that would have been one of the big issues, that they just gave PSG too much respect and too much of the ball. So I think we'll see a different Leipzig side, and one that I think can pose problems for Paris.
How are Paris Saint-Germain looking, Jules? Neymar still out, no? And Di Maria is in doubt. And Keane is out as well.
He came off at half-time after receiving a knock, like a bad tackle. So we're not sure if he can play. Neymar, as you said, is still out and will be out until the international break. He won't be involved with Brazil either. Icardi is not ready to come back. And Kylian Mbappe, who also came off with a sore thigh, will have to play. Otherwise, they only have, you know, kids up front to play in that as a centre forward. So it's not ideal, because Verratti is still out, because Paredes is still out, because Di Maria, as you said, is a dub. So there's a lot of players missing again for PSG. They will have to do with it anyway and hope that they can certainly play better than they did for half of the last two games. The first half against Başakşehir was not good enough. The first half against Nantes was not good enough either. In both games, they should have gone behind. They were a bit lucky in the end to win both games. So it's not the greatest of times. And overall, there's still the big debate around Thomas Tuchel, around the pressure that is on him and what he can do with that team.
Rafa, what's the relationship like between Tuchel and Julian Nagelsmann? Is there a kind of rivalry between the various bright young things of German management?
There is a bit of rivalry. I mean, there's certainly not a warm relation. Tuchel gave Nagelsmann a big break because he asked Nagelsmann to start scouting the opposition when he was still at Augsburg and a player that was very much at the end of his very short-lived career through injuries. And I think they had a reasonable relationship in the first few years, but then it seemed to have cooled down quite considerably. I don't think there's ever been a falling out. They just don't seem to really be much on the same wavelength. And after last summer's meeting, I think that'd be maybe just the tiniest of reasons why Nagelsmann want a bigger result. But I think he'll also want a result to deflect from his poor sartorial choices.
All right. It would have to be a pretty big scoreline to do that. What kind of scoreline do you think we're going to get? Jules, how optimistic are you?
I go 2-1 PSG. I still think they're going to dug deep and do this one. They have to anyway, you know.
Jules, I thought you'd stop supporting them after the last game against Başakşehir here.
You misunderstood. That was a half-time. Then by the end of the game, I was back.
Rafa?
I think Leipzig can get a draw, 1-1.
Okay, exciting. Başakşehir here, meanwhile, will be playing early on Wednesday, hosting Man United, the group leaders. They've continued their kind of bounce back in the Turkish Super League. They had a 2-1 win against Konyaspor. They've moved up to seventh now. You saw them against Paris Saint-Germain, Jules, last week. How much problems do you think they're going to pose Man United?
I think it will all depend what kind of state of Man United are, because Başakşehir will be very aggressive like they were against PSG. That's what they do. They have good creative players like Edin Visca, who especially from long range has a really good shot too. So they could be a threat. It's just that if you respond to the way they play, then I think you can beat them, and certainly United should beat them. It's all about if we see the same United as the one against Arsenal on Sunday, then I think you can worry that they might not respond well enough to what Başakşehir will offer. So it's a tricky one, even with no fans over there. And I think it's really one that you win on your attitude more than on your talent or on your organisation or anything like that.
Well, for all their problems, United after a brilliant start to this Champions League campaign. We'll see early Wednesday if that continues. Also on Wednesday in Group E, Sevilla will be up against Krasnodar. We mentioned that. But Chelsea host Rennes. Jules, Rennes got their first win in 6 matches this weekend, winning the derby against Brest.
They did indeed, James. They won 2-1, 2 goals from their centre-backs, Aguerd and Damien Da Silva. It was not perfect, and they still have no Camavinga, which is a big loss for them. He's not going to play as well on Wednesday at Stamford Bridge. It's not the same team without him. I think it's just a question of they need a perfect game, and they need Chelsea to be a bit in an off day to do something special at Stamford Bridge. I think they know that. We've seen them. I think they have a lot of passion and motivation and energy for the Champions League, but just not good enough just yet, especially against a team like Chelsea. So they will need something very special if they want something out of the game.
Against a Chelsea team that's really hit form in the last 2 or 3 matches. Group F, meanwhile, which is super tight. Lazio and Bruges both on 4 points. Borussia Dortmund on 3 and Zenit on none. Zenit host Lazio this week, who've begun to get some players back from that raft of COVID-19 positives, while Bruges host Dortmund. A Dortmund team who are playing catch-up, who, as we mentioned before, have got Der Klassiker coming up this weekend, who arrived fresh this weekend from a 2-0 win over Rafa.
Arminia Bielefeld.
Now, we've had a question here from Taxi Bigger Satan. I know.
What?
Yes, who says, Hi, Jimbo. For this week's European podcast, can you ask Rafa to give us an intro and brief history on Arminia Bielefeld? As a sporadic follower of Bundesliga, I've never heard about that team before. Crikey, well, Rafa.
They are a classic Bundesliga side. They just haven't been in the league itself for most part of the last 2 decades. But famous for their stadium, the Alm, quite an atmospheric ground. And famous for having a very good record against Dortmund as well, who travelled there on Saturday almost with a sense of this is our bogey team. But again, in context of not having played them out much in the last few years. So, yeah, not the most glamorous of clubs. In fact, quite the opposite. One of those clubs we call Graue Maus in Germany, grey mice, little clubs that nobody really takes much notice of.
Right.
But still, fairly historic. And hopefully they can stay up this year.
I mean, we would say maybe big dogs for the top teams.
Yeah, there's no such thing. No.
In Spain, we have elevator clubs, those that go down from the second division to the first and up and down, yeah.
I didn't think Bielefeld existed, Raf.
Yeah, you're not alone, James. There is a fairly funny internet conspiracy theory that alleges that Bielefeld is all just a made-up, a fictitious town that does not exist. But as we saw from the pictures on Saturday, Dortmund were there and live to tell the tale.
Wow. Make your own minds about that. Anyway.
For balance. For balance, we should also have a Bielefeld denier on the show.
So, there you go. What about Dortmund, Rafa? They exist.
They exist, and of course, their hopes of existing further in this competition rest on a positive result against Bruges. Mm. Mats Hummels, very unlikely to be there, unfortunately. He scored two goals against Bielefeld, which is unlike him as a centre-back, but he also picked up a hamstring injury. And it's a bit dubious whether he can play, which would be a big blow because he is so important for them, both in terms of the aerial power, but also the the build-up play and the leadership, the presence. So hopefully he can recover in time, but I think it's looking doubtful for him. Erling Haaland also not in action against Bielefeld because of a knee issue, but that seemed to have been more as a precaution, so he should be back. Oh, and one more word. Jude Bellingham had a fantastic game against Bielefeld.
Okay. Big games then for Dortmund, back-to-back against Bruges, and for Lazio, taking on Zenit home and away. Just 1 point separating Lazio, Dortmund, and Bruges in that group. Very good. That pretty much brings us to the end of today's Totally Football European show. But Alvaro, I think you've got some late-breaking news for us.
Yeah, Atletico de Madrid has a month to sign a player after selling Thomas Partey. Because Arsenal paid the release clause of Thomas, and according to the Spanish rules, you still have a month to replace that player that you have lost. And they are going to sign Kondogbia very soon, probably within hours from the recording of this podcast. Kondogbia plays for Valencia. He hasn't trained for 18 days because he was some sort of in rebellion because he wanted to go to Atletico de Madrid. This is going to be a player that will not be registered for the Champions League, at least for the group stage, but he will be very important for Atletico de Madrid moving forward and in the big picture. Yeah.
Atletico Madrid, that's just off the top of the Liga as it stands, 2 points behind with a game in hand. Crikey. All right, well, do join us on the Goals Show Tuesday and Wednesday for all the goals from Champions League Match Day 3. And, of course, next Tuesday when we return with more fresh continental information for you here on the Totally Football Show. For now, many thanks to Alvaro, to James, Julien and Raphael.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. Not at all. And you, listener, you're welcome. And we'll see you next time. Have a great week. Bye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.